Going to be here tomorrow night. It's going to be really good if you can come. We're at different parts of the book, and we're on step nine. If you're not on step nine, don't worry. It applies to you your first day here. It's how you can make your life a life of purpose, how you can make your life peaceful, what actions we need to take. So join us tomorrow at 6. On Wednesday night, we had finished with working with others, and we're going to read to wives. Now, to wives is really to alcoholics. When you read it and study it, it tells us what we were like and how people see us. And there's a lot of first step and really good information in that chapter, which I had an old idea that, you know, we shouldn't read because it's to wives. But I have my buddy here said, you know, it's in the big book. We should read it. So we did. We did it last July or August, and it was really good. So we're going to do what's called the lost chapters to wives, to employers, family afterwards. And then we always do a vision for you. And so that'll be Wednesday night. I hope you can join us. It's great stuff. I put out the, I did 3 episodes at home, 1 Drop the Rock. I finished the 3rd one. I had Stu listen to it to see if it was he's my censor. And he said it was really good. It's all about humility, which Gary talked about. And that'll be out today. Today we're on more about alcoholism. And it's chapter Before We Agnostics. And this chapter is put in there so that people could read this book and they could understand that they're screwed without God. Now, we're all laughing, but a lot of alcoholics never come to that conclusion. So they put another chapter in here, more about alcoholism, to tell us about that our bodies can never be changed, and that we have this queer mental twist that all the alcoholics and addicts have that tell us that it's okay to do something that we know is not okay. And so it overrides our will and our intellect. And all alcoholics who are real alcoholics have this. If you're not a real alcoholic, then you can just say no and you never drink again. And we got to the man of 30. And so we're on page 32. And I'm gonna stop at 10 so we have time to share. And it says, though we have no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped. There's no way to prove that. We don't know that. But the difficulty is few alcoholics have enough desire. They use the word desire several times in the next few paragraphs. And desire is a strong feeling of wanting to have something or have something happen. And it's a strong feeling. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one, but it doesn't say that they were able to stop forever. There's some new words in here I saw. We read this yesterday at the church meeting, and it was really good. And there's some new words that came in. The more I study this book, the more I see it. Gary mentioned the scriptures. I've been really studying the scriptures really intensely, and I think it came because that was a time when I was ready to learn. And I'd studied the big book, and I know the big book, but now I can see the relationship between the scriptures and the Word of God and the message in this book. And I wish all believers would study the big book on how to stay connected to the Spirit. I won't say Holy Spirit because that's a religious term, but to connect it to the Spirit and let it work in our lives. And we've given a gift here because we have tools to connect when we get disconnected. And I don't know what normal people do because we're not normal. But it's worked for me and it's such a gift. Also, Gary mentioned something about turning his life over to God and the surrender in step 3. One of the problems with step 3 is that it's unconditional. You can't put any conditions on your decision in step 3. It has to be everything. And it's, remember, it says, I know I'm getting off, but that's the way I am. Deal with it. It says on page 63, after you say the third step prayer. It's interesting, they put it after the prayer. It says, remember, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. Are you ready? And that you could at last abandon yourselves utterly to him. And I know I've got a guy sitting right here next to me who shared how that was such a powerful experience, that unconditional surrender. And when we do that, then things fall into place. Here's the story about Man for 30. I've read it several times. I thought it just was about some guy who said he wasn't going to drink for 30 years and then drank and died. But there's a lot more in this story. And this story is actually, they took these stories to Jay Walker. This story came from other books that they read and used to write the big book. It says, a man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was nervous in the morning. Any nervous alcoholics in here? Anybody nervous all day? I think nervous would describe our normal alcoholic state. We're anxious, right? We don't even know what we're anxious about, but we know there's something we should be worrying about and that we don't know about it yet. All alcoholics live in this world of fear. We don't even realize it because it's the water we swim in. Like two fish are swimming and they ask the other one, what's water? I mean, you don't even know it. I had a new guy a few weeks ago who said he didn't have any fear. I said, well, you do, you just don't know because it's normal for you. And so he was nervous in the morning after these bouts and he quieted himself with more liquor. So he'd already had some liquor, right? He was ambitious to succeed in business. Now here's the message of this. His higher power became success. Remember Bill W. said the drive for success was on. Why? Because he's an alcoholic and he wants approval. He thought he could wrest satisfaction, happiness out of life if he managed well. Isn't that the delusion that we all had? It's one I had. It's on page 62. And so he thought he could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life if he became a success. Then people would think well of him. But he saw that he would get nowhere if he drank at all, so success became higher power than alcohol. He was powerless over his drive for success. That was driving him. He couldn't stop. But he knew that if he drank, he couldn't achieve that. So once he started to drink, he knew he had no control, so he was a real alcoholic. Remember, an alcoholic never regains control. Now, he forgot that when he started to drink again. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. So he was able to postpone his drinking till he became a success. And so there's a message in there that if we have any lurking notion around a reservation that we can drink again, it'll come back. I know people who go to treatment say, well, I won't drink for 5 years or something, or a year or something. Well, that lurking notion is still there. It has to be unconditional admission of powerless. So he made up his mind that until he'd been successful in business and retired, he would not touch another drop. So he had a plan. All alcoholics have a plan, right? I'm going to become a success, and then I can drink my guts out, right? and I deserve it. Right? Because I got this and I became successful, so I deserve that celebration. He just put it off for 30 years. He had a lot of willpower to succeed in business. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry, I like the word, bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. Now somebody said, was he really happy? Well, he was happy in the extent that he was getting what he thought he needed. But it wasn't enough. He knew he still had alcohol coming as a reward. And why did he need alcoholics? Because being a success in business wasn't enough. So he was happy, but he had that plan to drink. And so there's a powerful message in that. Then he fell victim. Notice the word is he fell a victim. We're victimized by a belief. A belief is a thought that we believe is true. that practically every alcoholic has, this is one that kills a lot of us, that is a long period of sobriety and self-discipline. Notice sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. So he thought, well, I've been sober for a while and I've had self-discipline. And they're talking about now how he drank, his control. He could control his drinking now because he'd had self-discipline not to drink, right? And he'd been sober a long time, so he could just control how much he drank. And that's a victim. That's a belief that's not true, right? So they're going to hammer that home on the next page. You're going to say, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So sobriety and self-discipline is not enough. It's not enough to keep us from drinking, and it's not enough to keep us from controlling our drink. And some people think that even, I've seen people with 30 days. They say, I've been sober 30 days, and I don't miss it, and I can stop any time, and I'll start drinking. Well, I don't think that experiment ever works. And sometimes we never see him again. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle, so he was really ready, you know. He's getting in the chair. Anybody have a chair? He got his carpet slippers and a bottle. I think he had more than a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He's puzzled and humiliated. We talk about that. What the hell happened? I said, success in business, had self-discipline and control. Now I'm in the hospital. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while. We know how that works, making several trips to the hospital in between. Then here it is. This is the alcoholic oath. I'm going to gather all my forces in attempting to stop altogether, and found he could not. The solemn oath. All of his willpower, everything that he had within him was not enough. So they're going to tell us what that means. It says every means of solving his problem with money could buy was at his disposal. He had everything he could do. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, went to pieces quickly and dead within 4 years. Now, the reason why it doesn't work well after a long period is because your body's older and your liver's older and it doesn't metabolize as well. And things turn to crap very quickly because the metabolites accumulate in the liver. The liver fails quickly. And so he died. So this is a powerful lesson in so many ways. Most of us believe that if we remain sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. That must be the belief if you drink again. Or that it's not going to be so bad. Or that I can stop anytime. There must be something in your mind that tells you it's okay, but none of it really makes sense when you look at the evidence. But here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated over and over again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So what makes you an alcoholic? You have loss of what? Control when you drink, and you've lost the power of choice. Anybody have that in this room? You're never going to not have that. So why do people drink again? Because they forget that. They can't bring it into the level of their consciousness in terms that will prevent them from doing it. So what's the only thing that I've learned to do that is my relationship with God. There's something that God gives me, I can't explain it, that tells me it's a bad idea. And it says it's not going to work. All of us in this room are going to think about drinking again at some point, maybe all today, just a minute, a brief second. But we know it's not going to work. It's not part of our lives. We just shake our head. And shaking my head, it reminds me of a powerful story about my alcoholic recovery, is that book, Passions of the Mind, or something about the mind, the professor in Princeton, what's the name of that movie?
Beautiful Mind.
You know, that's all about, at the end, how we deal with our alcoholism. Because he had these two people in his life that weren't real. And he interacted with them. I mean, and we didn't know they weren't real till almost three quarters to the end of the movie. They're not real. They're in his mind. He had this world that he created, like we do, in which these people were real. And they talked to him, and he took his advice. Does that sound like alcoholism? And so he gets the Nobel Prize. He's in the lobby. And his wife's there. and his family, and they're over in the corner. And he looks at them and he shakes his head. He shakes his head that they're not, he was able to treat a schizophrenia. He shakes his head and says, I'm not going to listen to them. Isn't that what we do in AA? Isn't that what we do when we get these thoughts? We say, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to listen to God. We turn away. He turned away from them back into the world. And I think that's what we do all day long in step 6 and 7 and step 10. So anyway, there I go. I'm off topic again. Don't yell at me. Commencing to drink. And so we're always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink. And why are meetings important? Meetings are important. So we're reminded all the time, I'm an alcoholic. We come here, we say we're an alcoholic. And Gary talked about humility. Well, there's a form of humility. Go, hey. There's a form of humility that I need help. I need to be part of something greater than me that can help me. That's why the fellowship is so important. It says, if you're planning to stop drinking, anybody here planning to stop? Anybody want to stop? Here it is. There must be no reservation of any kind, no any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Now, if you plan to stop, we all want to do that. I must have no reservation of any kind. I mean, no reservation about working the steps. No reservation about doing what my sponsor tells me. No reservation about following through on the path. Nor any lurking notion that I'll be immune to alcohol. We have to hammer that home. We don't read this line enough at meetings. It's young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think they can stop as he did on their own willpower. Well, we hope not. And did he? He didn't. He stopped only for a while. See, it doesn't matter how many years you've been sober. You're going to have that lurking notion that that someday you're going to be immune. It's going to be okay. Remember, anybody here sober? Is everybody sober today? If anybody in this room ever drinks again, they're going to have the notion that it's going to be okay. And there's somebody in this room that's going to drink again. I hope it's not me. But, you know, alcoholics do that because it's hard to stay on the path. It says, we doubt if many of them can do it because none will really want to stop. That's probably true. That's why it's hard to work with young people. They want to stop, but they don't really want to stop. They want to stop but because of the consequences, but they really are not yet defeated. It's hard to get defeated at 22 or 23. As he did on their own willpower, but people can do it. We doubt if many of them can do it because none will really want to stop. And hardly one of them. Now, here's the deal. Because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, we'll find he can win out. So how do you know when you're a real alcoholic? When you've got this peculiar mental twist that you can't stop, that'll tell you it's okay to drink or use. And a lot of people don't realize when that's happened. And they drink right through that. And so that's the thing that kills us, that peculiar, that's what they call the peculiar mental twist. Several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years. You know, they didn't think that you could be an alcoholic less than 30. Clarence Snyder became a very famous member of AA, started the Cleveland group, told the Cleveland newspapers at one time that he was the founder of AA. He was quite a character. This was in 1940. But he helped a lot of people. When he went, his wife sent him to Dr. Bob in Akron in 1937 or 8. And he went there, and Dr. Bob looked at him and says, young man, I don't think you could be an alcoholic. He was 35 years old. You know, they just didn't believe it, but, you know, they just had it was a different world in those days. They couldn't see it. To be gravely affected, now this is a bad thing. A gravely affected. Now, I've often thought that some people think they're affected, but they're not gravely infected. And I remember that person who told me that they were 95% ready and convinced. There was a 1 or 2% that they were holding back. Well, it's like having a little bit of cancer. I've seen people look great. They come in my office, they have a little cancer, but then they're dead in 6 months. To be gravely affected. One does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take quantities some of us have. Now, this is really a good point. Being helpless, being gravely affected, being powerless over alcohol has nothing to do with the time you drank or the amount you drank. It's when you lose power of choice and control. That's really a powerful statement. You know, we have to remember that. Some people come in and say, well, I didn't drink that much. I didn't have a DUI yet. And so you're gravely affected when you have that queer mental twist. And when you have the body of an alcoholic, you can't control how much you drink. Then they talked about women. They didn't think women could be alcoholics till they had the first member. Because women, it was a different world. They drank at home. They drank by themselves. They didn't go to the bars. Potential female alcoholics often turned the real thing had gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large number of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try and get them to see it. So here's the point I have is that they are alcoholics, but they don't see it. They can't see it. They can't get them to see it. And what can't you get them to see? The truth of their situation, that they're in a hopeless and futile situation. They can't see it. Does that sound like constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself? I think all that means is that there's some people who cannot see the hopelessness and futility of life as they're living it. They cannot see it. And if they can't, then how can they admit they're powerless over alcohol and that their lives are unmanageable? As we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. Anybody agree with that? If anyone questions whether he's entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he's a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there's very scant chance of success. Scant's not good, by the way. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers, though. And you hear people who stay sober for some reason or other, and they have good reasons, and they can exert their willpower for a certain period of time. It says, though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. So they're using the word potential alcoholic for you are an alcoholic, but you're not practicing yet. You can't see it yet. You're only potential in your own mind, I believe. We think few to whom this book will appeal. So here's who they're writing the book for. They're writing for people who are real alcoholics, can stay dry anything like a year. Anybody agree with that? Some will be drunk the day after making their resolutions. I would say some will be drunk the day they make their resolutions. Anybody do that? Anybody make a firm resolution and drink that day? Most of them within a few weeks. And a firm decision, a resolution is a firm decision to do or not do something. I'll just read one more paragraph. I'll read to the end of the page because it's important that it all ties together. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Is that a good question? So how do you stop? Well, Nancy Reagan had a plan, just say no. You can go to California and spend time at the beach. They got a really good program, but it costs $60,000. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. You see, that's the whole point. Does the person reading this book, who is a real alcoholic, do they have a desire to stop? Now, here it is. Whether such a person can quit upon a spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Now to me, I wrote in here, that's the definition of powerless over alcohol. Whether you can quit on a non-spiritual basis. And that will depend on the extent to where you lost the power to choose. If you've lost the power of choice, you cannot quit on a non-spiritual basis. And when they mean spiritual, they mean God. Sorry for those who don't like the word. But you can't quit without God. Now the whole book here is about how you find that relationship of God with God that gives you the power of choice. And it says many of us have felt we had plenty of character. Any characters in here? We're characters. I don't know if we had plenty of characters. There's a tremendous urge to cease forever. Yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. So then it says, how can our readers determine if you're one of us? How do you know if you're one of them? Because you're reading the book. This book is written, they assume you're sitting there, you've had a real bad time, like Gary said, and they give you this book. The experiment for quitting full time will be helpful, but here's the service that they gave to the world. They're going to describe the mental states that precede a relapse in the drinking. Now, why are they going to do that? Because no alcoholic, they know no alcoholic's going to want to work the rest of the steps. No alcoholic's want to surrender. No alcoholic's going to willing to believe that there's a power greater than themselves because they've been their own power forever. And precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this corrects the problem. And relapse, we use the word relapse into drinking. So I wrote that as suffer deterioration, to slide back. It means you're sober, right? And then you slide back into drinking. And so you don't get some point and then you drink again. You just slide back. You were in a state where you weren't really protected, right? Does that make sense? And so the alcoholic will always relapse. The real true alcoholic, that's part of the disease. So we look down on people who relapse, but they're me. They're all of us, right? And we should love them and welcome them back because they're just powerless like we are. Okay, so I'm going to stop there, and then we'll pick it up because we're going to read about Jim and the Jaywalker and Fred. It's so powerful, this chapter. So we'll open it up, and thank you all for your attention.